On this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we're going to be continuing with H.R. 748. This is part 17 of the series on the largest stimulus package in U.S. history. And this week, we are talking about Title IV, which focuses on economic stabilization and assistance. We're also going to be taking a look at President Trump's recent recordings with regards to knowingly false statements that he made to the public during official government events geared towards giving information to the public. And I want to know, of course, what you guys think about that. So be sure to leave a comment, as well as making sure that you let us know what you think about the stimulus package, how that's going, and how we're covering it.
This is Lessons from the screen.
John Boy.
Another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. And you are always welcomed. And as always, Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PACS Inc., a Black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for Black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. You should definitely go and check them out at www.pacsinc.org. That's pacsinc.org. Leave a review, leave a comment, leave a donation, tell a friend to tell a friend, become a member, take a survey, do what you can to help them because they're doing what they can to help you. And remember to share this podcast with your friends, whatever podcast network you're listening to it on. Share it with your friends, share it with your family, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and let's go ahead and jump right on into it. So we are moving into the home stretch today. We are getting into Title IV, which covers economic stabilization and assistance to severely distressed sectors of the United States economy, starting with Subtitle A, which is the Coronavirus Economic Stabilization Act of 2020. And after we get through the sections, we're going to talk a bit about the latest Trump insert foot series, as he has both inserted his foot in his own mouth again, and there are seemingly a larger than expected amount of Black people that are inserting their heads into his ass. But that might very well be a show for next week. So, you know, as far as the details go, you know what? I think I'm going to talk about that next week. Anyways, so we're going to jump right into it. Section 4001. Is merely the short title that tells us what this section can be referred to, and that is the Coronavirus Economic Stabilization Act of 2020. Section 4002 goes into definitions for the section. The chief thing of mention here is that all of the mentions of secretary refer to the Secretary of the Treasury. So, Section 4003 is where things get a bit dicey and where this section gets a bit where this title gets a bit meaty. So Section 4003, I almost said 4000 free. Anyways, covers the emergency relief and taxpayer protections. And this section authorizes $500 billion, that's billion with a B, to provide loans, guarantees, and other investments to businesses, cities, states regarding losses related to COVID-19 through the direction and under the authority of the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, of this $500 billion with a B dollars, $25 billion is set aside for lending to airline businesses and businesses that support them, like maintenance, inspections, and ticket sale businesses. $4 billion is set aside for air cargo carriers. $17 billion is set aside for maintaining national security. That's always a big deal. And then you have $454 billion with a B, and any amount left over unused from the above set-asides that are for the Federal Reserve lending facilities to support eligible entities through purchasing obligations or interest directly from the issuing party. the secondary markets or making loans secured by collateral. This basically means buying the debt of financial institutions or issuing loans to financial institutions with the idea of stabilizing them and thus stabilizing the economy, which is in bad shape due to a lack of diversified economic activity. Primarily the movement of debt. When we're talking about economic activity in America, we live in a debt-based society. It is what it is. The monetary system of America works through debt. It works by people borrowing from their future to live in the present. And they're, you know, that's essentially what debt is. You say, okay, at a certain amount of time in my future, I'm going to have money, excess, to do things with. Instead of doing things with that excess when I actually have it in the future, I'm going to trade that future excess to you so that I can ball out right now. That's how it goes. So that's the way debt is set up. That's the way the American society works. The marketplaces and everything are based on the transference and control of debt. That's neither here nor there, though. That's a whole other show. But that's what this $454 billion is set aside to account for. The loss of economic activity, the tightening up of the debt circles because the market is in a recession has caused the economy to slow. It's caused it to contract. It's caused it to go into, dare I say, what they say is called a recession. That's what we're in right now, people, a recession. And so this was passed to try to alleviate the damages that could come from that recession and try to spur these institutions into giving away money again, giving away debt again. But I've already lingered too far on that subject, but that's just because I'm just so passionate about debt and about economics and about money and about finances and about, all right, so all of these loans and guarantees are issued at the Secretary's discretion, the Secretary of the Treasury, and at a rate that the Secretary deems acceptable. Now, real quick, the difference between a loan and a guarantee is that a loan is direct cash from an issuing source, while a guarantee is an assurance to a loan grantor that they will get their money back. VA home loans for veterans are 100% backed by the government, but the government does not directly give out the money. They just certify that the banks that do give out the money will get their money back, whether the vet pays or not. Now, this is a side off from that, but I do think when it comes to VA loans and anything vet related, the government should be in the business of doing that. That's what I think. I don't think the vets should have to deal with banks or any other financial institutions. I think that the government should just write a check to the vet for however much the house is going to cost and let that be that. No mortgage, no regular payments, no nothing. Just give the fucking vets the house. And I'm saying that as a vet. Let me say that because it got biased, definitely. But, you know, just give the vets the house, all right? Let's not make them jump through all these hoops and pretend like, you know, because for a lot of these vets, you know, you need a certain credit score to even allow financial institutions to give you the VA loan. And that's even with it being 100% backed. And that's just not right. It's just not right. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Well, actually, it's here and there and everywhere else. But moving on is what I'm trying to do. VA home loans are a perfect example of guarantees. So, yeah, that's the difference. The Secretary of Treasury, however, is responsible for putting all this together, and the entire program basically exists at the discretion of this Secretary of the Treasury. Now, lending or guarantee agreements may be entered into as long as the Secretary determines that the business cannot reasonably get credit elsewhere. The obligation is taken on with proper consideration. The credit is sufficiently secured at a rate that is proper for the risk based on market conditions. That the duration is set as short as possible and not longer than 5 years. Again, these are all the requirements that the secretary has to make determinations on before giving out a loan or a guarantee. And again, all of these things are at the secretary's opinion or discretion. For 12 months, well, this part isn't, because for 12 months after the loan is paid off, borrowers and their affiliates cannot engage in equity transactions like stocks, securities, and dividend payouts unless under contractual obligation. The agreement has to include that the companies will maintain employment levels equal to their current levels, 90% of their current levels, on March 24th, 2020. So whatever their levels were on March 24th, 2020, they have to maintain at least 90% of those levels through September 30th, 2020. And the thing with the stocks prevents them from taking this money and going ham in the stock market with it and making money with the money. And the thing with this piece about them having to maintain employment is quite obviously to make sure that they're not pocketing all that money that they're getting to pay employees and just downsizing anyways. So that's what those things are. And I think those things are both very, very good and useful and just. And remember now with the stock thing, that's not just for the loan duration, but that's also for a year after the loan is paid off. Anyways, the agreement is only for U.S. companies, and the agreement is only for businesses that have incurred or are expecting to incur losses that threaten the life of the businesses. And again, this is all at the discretion of the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, with regards to the Federal Reserve programs or facilities, these loans are bilateral original loans that carry the same restrictions on financial activities with regards to equity as the previous loans. And by bilateral, it means it's a two-party loan. Somebody applies, somebody gets, somebody gives, or somebody asks, somebody gives. There's no third parties involved. But with regards to the Federal Reserve programs, the Secretary of Treasury can issue a waiver to these financial activity restrictions, but he must make himself available to Congress to explain the reasoning behind the waiver. And verification that the recipient is not insolvent is also required. So the Secretary of the Treasury can, if he so chooses, waive the restrictions on participation in the financial markets for financial institutions who are involved in these loans. He just has to make himself available to Congress to explain why he or she has decided to do what they've decided to do. Now, yes, I say this every episode, and I'm going to continue to say it every episode. All of this at the discretion of the secretary shit, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. But this also showcases the extreme importance behind political participation, not just on a local level, although we know on a local level that's the most important piece for most people, but on a national level as well, where when you really start digging into the laws, the policies and things of that nature, you find that the political appointees that the president has at their discretion, the people that have to be confirmed by the Senate, not just the judges, but the secretaries, these people have an immense amount of power, and they very much do shape instances and occurrences in your daily life. So that being said, that's that. Anyways, so moving on into assistance for mid-sized businesses, the secretary is instructed to create programs or otherwise encourage the involvement of financial institutions with regards to offering credit to nonprofits with between 500 and 10,000 employees at an interest rate not higher than 2%. The secretary can cancel the interest rates the interest payments altogether if he so chooses, and borrowers applying for a direct loan under this program have to make a good faith certification that the loan is necessary to consider operations because of COVID, along with other requirements mentioned earlier, with the added caveat that the recipient will not outsource or offshore jobs or cancel CBAs or attempt to renegotiate CBAs during the loan term and for up to 2 years afterwards. The recipient has to remain neutral in any organizing effort for the term of the loan. And loans are only available for businesses that are traded or businesses that have collateral to offer in the form of equity interest or senior debt instruments, which is a form of equity collateral. Now, this is all totally at the discretion of the Secretary of the Treasury again, and the Secretary is empowered to do anything with that collateral as long as he deems or she deems that it is in the best interest of the American people. None of these loans can be forgiven with regards to the principal, although the interest can, as I mentioned earlier, and no more than $100 million of the allotted amount can be used to pay administrative fees. The Secretary also has the discretion to appoint financial institutions as financial agents of the U.S. to fulfill whatever duties the Secretary deems is necessary to respond to COVID and to be paid for performing these duties. And the bigger issue here with regards to the Secretary of the Treasury in this part is that the Secretary of the Treasury is essentially being given a bunch of money and given a bunch of responsibility for choosing who's going to get a bunch of money. And I keep going back to this system of nepotism, cronyism, and all of these other things we have going on in American politics today, where this is going to be taken advantage of if it hasn't already. I'm sure if I did some of my investigative work and decided to do a show on this, I would find without too much hassle that there have been a lot of people getting preferential treatment because of who they know, not because of the quality of the service that they provide. But That's going to be a reoccurring beef that I'm going to have, that I have been having, that I'm going to continue to have with regards to the way these legislative pieces are set up, because it is total horse shit. Thank you. So moving on, and the rest of these sections are a lot shorter, so it definitely, you know, we should kind of move through these. Section 4004, limitations on certain employee compensations. And this section basically says that if any business that receives one of these loans cannot give a compensation boost to employees or officers that make more than $425,000 a year for the duration of the loan and for 1 year afterwards, unless it is part of a contract agreed upon before March 2020. Now, employees or officers making more than $3 million have their compensation packages capped at $3 million plus half of what they made in 2019 over the $3 million threshold. I don't necessarily have a problem with this. I'm one of them people that's like, maybe instead of looking at minimum wages, we should look at maximum wages. I know that's not a very popular thought at all. People want to make what they want to make, but anything that caps, like, I'm like, yo, why do you need to make who needs $3 million a year? Who needs that kind of money? Now, I understand there are various institutions, forces, and people out there that want that kind of money and that can leverage that kind of money to do extreme good in various situations and extreme bad in various other situations. But I'm just sitting here like, who needs that money? So, you know, that again is a discussion for another day. Section 4005, but as a whole, I think that section 4004 is a needed section. I was actually pleased to see that it was in there in terms of preventing a corporate greed from taking a hold the same way it did after the last stimulus package in 2008, I believe it was. So moving forward, section 4005 is a continuation of certain air services. And this section authorizes the Secretary of Transportation to require, to the extent reasonable, that air carriers receiving loans and guarantees maintain scheduled air transportation deemed necessary by the Secretary of Transportation to ensure that services to any point being served by that carrier prior to March 2020 still get service. And supply chain for medical supplies and protective equipment should be considered. This is one of those, you know, like, yeah, okay, type pieces of section. So I didn't have a huge problem with this one either. Now moving on, section 4006, coordination with the Secretary of Transportation. This instructs the Secretary of Treasury to coordinate with the Secretary of Transportation. It's almost insulting that this even has to be a thing, but you know it does. Anyways, so section 4007, Suspension of certain aviation excise taxes. Now, this section creates an excise tax holiday period and thus suspends excise tax and taxes. Why is that so hard for me to say? I have no clue. It might be because I'm sleepy. Anyways, this section, and I'm not going to cut any of this out. I'm leaving it all in because I feel like it's funny. When I listen back to this, I might laugh. Or I might be like, yeah, I should have cut that out. Who knows? Anyways, so 4007, suspension of certain aviation excise taxes. This section creates an excise tax holiday period and thus suspends excise taxes imposed on commercial air transportation, both passenger and cargo, as well as fuel. An excise tax basically is a tax that the government imposes on certain products deemed harmful. The goal is to make it more expensive to manufacture these products and bring them to market so as to have fewer of these items on the market. Things like aircraft fuel, which are harmful to the atmosphere, fall into the category of having an excise tax. Now, I don't like this because of what an excise tax is. I don't like the idea of canceling something that's beneficial in the long term because we're dealing with the situation we're dealing with right now. I do not like this. I don't like the habit of removing restrictions. And we've seen that a lot with this administration where there's a habit of it removing restrictions on certain things, especially things regarding the Environmental Protection Agency. So not saying that this is one of those things, but when you look at the purpose of an excise tax and when you look at what air travel actually does to the environment, removing or providing a tax holiday of this nature is kind of like, in my opinion, encouraging the continuing degradation of the ecosystem of the planet. So with that being said, we're going to move on. Section 4008, Debt Guarantee Authority. Now, this section authorizes the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, to establish a debt guarantee program for solvent insured financial institutions and holding companies for those institutions. Now, we talked about insolvent earlier. So when you're solvent, you basically have more assets than you have debt, than you have liabilities. And when you're insolvent, it's the other way around. So non-interest bearing transaction accounts, aka checking accounts and the like, so accounts that don't collect interest for leaving your money in them, can be treated as a debt guarantee program. And the National Credit Union Administration, the NCUA, is given the authority to increase the insurance coverage for these accounts until the end of the year. And basically what the FDIC does is up to a certain amount of money that you have stored in a bank, if that money goes missing, you can get it back. You can get an insurance payout for that money. So basically a lifting of the ceiling of that insurance. 4009 is a temporary government in the Sunshine Act relief. I don't like this one, but I understand it. But this allows the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve to conduct meetings without regards to the requirements that normally govern such meetings if the chairman determines it in writing until December 31st, 2020. Now, the Fed is still required to keep records of votes and the reasons for votes. And basically, the Sunshine Act was passed in 1976 and requires that all meetings of an agency be open to public observation. Now, the reason I don't like this section is because it removes the requirement that these meetings be public, you know, so I don't see why they couldn't still be public while also having social distancing and other things be in place. They could be having digital meetings. You know, they could be having online meetings using Skype or Google Meets or Zoom or anything of the nature, and still have an audience that is able to listen in and watch and see what the discussions are about. And also, so to another point, though, to let you guys know, in case you missed it, yes, the Federal Reserve meetings are public. You can most definitely attend one. I don't understand how there's so much misunderstanding going around about the Federal Reserve and what they actually do. And these people have public meetings showcasing what they do. The documentation is public, showcasing what they've done and why they do it. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that we don't know or believe that there are some behind the scenes things going on. Of course there are. It's the fucking government. But there's way too much ignorance out there surrounding the Federal Reserve for all of the information that's also available. So that, but again, that's a topic for another day. It really is. But moving forward, the last section we're going to talk about today is section 4010, which is a temporary high inflexibility. And this section allows the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, to hire positions deemed necessary for COVID operations and response without regards to some of the restrictions they would otherwise face. Now, HUD, I understand the Housing and Urban Development Department, but the SEC and the CFTC are both primarily financial institution regents, regulators. That seems like an extraordinary level of care and concern given to the financial markets versus other markets versus the people. But so I get it in terms of they might need to make hiring decisions quickly, or they might need to be able to maneuver more flexibly. I get it. But at the same time, I'm just kind of like, why the SEC and why the CFTC? Why not make it something that was blanketed for all of the agencies that are dealing with potential COVID issues? That just didn't make much sense to me. All in all, though, this starting section was a mixed bag. The biggest beef I had was the extraordinarily high amount of power given to the Secretary of the Treasury in order to make arbitrary decisions with little to no overhead, with the exception of that one instance where they would be forced to give a comment to or give an answer to Congress should Congress ask for it regarding one of the decisions. But other than that, It's a mixed bag. There have been other sections that have been... Now, you know what? This might have actually been the section that bothered me more than any other section in this thing. But all in all, I'm still not seeing... Like, there was some good sections earlier, but right now, like, this doesn't help, in my opinion. This doesn't help the average person. This doesn't help the average business, even. This stuff helps people that already have money. And I know that's kind of alluded to and hinted at when they start talking about, you know, the stability of the economy. The current view is that you stabilize the economy by stabilizing the larger forces in it instead of stabilizing the plethora of smaller forces that are operating in it. But that's my opinion. So I understand the logic behind it, but I don't agree with it fundamentally. So moving on, and that's all we're going to talk about with regards to Section 4000, the actual H.R. 748. But let's very quickly, I want to talk about the recent scandal regarding Trump. It has come to light through an audio recording of him talking to a reporter during which he knew he was being recorded, that he knew back in February, the February-March timeframe, that the coronavirus was airborne, that it was more deadly than the regular flu. And he acknowledged that he'd been lying to the public in order to, quote unquote, avoid panic. That's what he says, even though it can be argued that what he actually did invoked more panic than anything else. While on the surface, this might seem cool, the fact is his consistent downplaying of the pandemic and the flouting of safety procedures, as well as fighting with healthcare professionals made matters worse, if anything else. Not to mention the fact that panic has not been avoided, as I said earlier. As of this show, the coronavirus has infected more than 6.5 million people in the U.S., the most in the world, even more than China and India, who both have roughly three times the amount of people as the U.S. And roughly 200,000 people have died in America. At this point, you have to lay at least half of those deaths squarely at the feet of the way President Trump and his administration have decided to handle this pandemic. Yes, I said it. I would lay up to 100,000 deaths directly at their feet. Because there's no reason, given the power, flexibility, and resources present in America, that we couldn't have gotten out in front of this thing and we couldn't have kept the civilians safe. There's no earthly reason why things have gone the way they've gone, with the exception of acknowledging that there are a bunch of incompetent idiots in the White House right now, in politics right now, period, that are retarded. There's really no other way to say it. These people don't have our best interests at heart. They don't have that. I don't even think they know how to have our best interests at heart. And that's just by virtue of the nature of the people that want this kind of power. These are inherently narcissistic people. Every now and then you might run into one or two who are not and truly want to do good. But for the most part, you gotta already be a pretty interesting type person to want to be a politician. So, especially to want to be president, that takes a level of God complex that, and again, not all, but for most, that, you know, we really shouldn't be beating up on Trump about his God complex. They all have God complex, especially considering there's so many other things for you to beat up on Trump about. But needless to say, the way that they've handled this pandemic has been atrocious. And I'm not going to harp on this because if you've been following it, you already have your opinion. And if you haven't, then you probably still already have your opinion. But mine is that this is yet another in a long line of a long list of impeachable offenses. And I say that because these lies have directly cost American lives and has drug out the economic damage caused by the coronavirus. Bill Clinton was impeached for lying under oath. For lying. Donald Trump has lied under oath, out of oath, on top of oath, beside oath, beneath oath, to the side of oath, diagonally to oath. This dude has lied. Even when he said, "I lied," he's lying. Anyways, I don't really hate Trump as bad as some of you might think. It's fun to pick on him. I don't think he's a good president. I definitely don't support 98% of the stuff he does. I don't think any of that stuff has the best interest of black people in heart or in practice. But I'm not somebody that's going to hate somebody that I don't know and probably is never going to meet. And honestly, don't really care that much about. If he wasn't president, I could give two shits about Donald Trump. So anyways, that being that, that's the show. I know I was going to, and I said it earlier, I was going to talk about black folk believing the story that Republicans are better for black people. But I've decided that that's going to be a discussion for another show, probably the add-on to next week's show as we continue through HR 748. I don't know if you noticed or not, but I am trying to add in some current events around these discussions so that I don't miss a lot. But unless something else happens, that's probably going to be where we at next week. I'll go ahead and say it, though. It's not true. Now, tune in next week to hear why. I'll do your own research and don't. But I know you're going to tune in because you want to hear what I got to say. I want to hear what I got to say. And I want to hear what you got to say about what I got to say. So make sure you leave comments. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you tell your friends. And let's keep this thing going. Let's keep this thing growing. Let's make it do what it do, baby.
This is Lessons from the Screen.
John Boy.
So thank you guys for listening to the show, to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you always enjoy it. Remember, you can check out all of the shows. All of them are going to be only found on the Freedom Train Network. That's www.freedomtrainradio.com. And that goes again for all of the shows on the network. You can only find all of the shows available for all of the shows on the network on Freedom Train website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. So go there and check them out. You only get the latest 25 shows, I believe, on the podcast directories. So Check us out. Show support for all of the shows we have. Shelby's World, Enigma Self Hour, The Fix, Sports Podcast, Freedom Train Podcast Series, and all of the other shows that are around. Definitely go and show them love. As for this show in particular, you can check us out. Support us on Patreon.com. That's patreon.com/LFTS. That's patreon.com/LFTS. And there you can drop us. You can show support by sponsoring the show, giving us money every month, giving us money per episode, and just letting us know that you support us. And by doing such things, you allow us to be able to spend more time creating and composing the shows. Shows like this series and shows like a lot of the series that we do take a lot of time to put together. We're talking about hours upon hours upon hours of research. And it'd be nice to be able to take the time to do those shows and do them correctly the way we really want to do them. And also to be able to do them more frequently, because a lot of these shows should probably be done a lot more frequently. So, love you. See you next week. Hope you have fun.